Welcome, one and all, to the Wabam Entertainment Podcast. My name is Landon Bell. I am going to be your host this evening, and I am joined by the ever-amazing Isaac.
Hey, Mason.
And the equally ever-amazing Brandon Alvarado.
Swish.
And tonight we are going to be talking about everyone's favorite new Marvel movie, Captain Marvel. Guys, let's talk about some overall thoughts on this film. What'd you guys think about it?
Okay. I thought Marvel movie was a jigsaw puzzle. It was a kaleidoscope of wonder. No, I'm kidding. So Captain Marvel for me was everything it needed to be and more. And here's why. My expectations for this movie were very tempered. I wasn't overly hyped about it. Not that I didn't care for it, but it wasn't like me waiting for the next Thor movie or me waiting for a Flash movie. It was the next Marvel movie that I wanted to watch. So I mostly watch it because of my love of the MCU and because of the upcoming Endgame and the role that this movie was going to play towards that. But I was pleasantly surprised. I enjoyed the time period. I enjoyed that they made it a period piece. And the reason why I enjoyed it so much is because it didn't only reference the 90s. It didn't only was in the 90s. It felt like a 90s movie. It felt like an action movie that was shot in the 90s, even though, of course, it had a clean HD 2019 aesthetic. The effects were on point. I really enjoyed the amnesiac model of storytelling. I think they nailed that pretty well. A lot of people call the movie clunky and cluttered. I personally enjoy the fact that it picks up from the POV of someone that doesn't remember, and it pretty puts you in the driver's seat, and the way she remembers and the way they tell a story is based on how she starts remembering and starts connecting the pieces and all that stuff. It just has the similar villain. I don't want to say villain trouble, like a lot of people would say. Like people would say that this movie suffered, all Marvel movies suffer from a villain issue. I don't think it's a villain issue. I think it's mostly that they concentrate so much on the hero's journey that the villains are a secondary character, which this one definitely feels that way. But I truly enjoyed her character of Carol Danvers. I look forward to what's coming up in Endgame and her role. I don't know. We'll talk about spoilers a little bit later, but I enjoyed it. And more than anything, my wife loved this movie. My wife teared up on a lot of scenes on it. So the effect that it had on her, how it grabbed her and how much she enjoyed it in terms of her being a woman and what it meant to her, made this movie take a special place in my heart. So I'm glad that Marvel did this. I'm glad Marvel picked Brie Larson, and I think she was great as a hero. So I liked it.
This is a movie that I would argue needed at least one or two rewrites. That the basic is there, that I enjoy, and that I think is a solid Captain Marvel movie about her being in the Kree Force, how she's an amnesia again, because it fits the story and all, but it's something. I mean, it without the back and forth between Nick and Fury, which is one of the highlights of the movie, in my opinion, I would argue that the movie falls apart. Would fall apart because it's extremely thin in story. And how should I word this? They never gave her a shot to well established as a character, so you could connect with her, which is why I'm saying that, unlike something like Alita Battle Angel, which everyone knows that I love at this point, and it's not one of, and the fighting choreography, particularly in the end, besides the flight scenes, those were incredible. They just felt uninspiring, so to speak. You have these incredible science fiction technology, and you have these light force energy-based powers, and you are rather redundant with how you use it, so to speak. It's like a Superman movie with Lex Luthor, and he has no technology that can challenge him, or the kryptonite that can challenge him, and it's just Superman going in, grab him, and get to jail, if you know what I mean. It was that kind of uninspiring, or and I don't really know if I agree with the special effects was on point, because when she lands in one of the scenes when they're trying to control her powers, it was so obviously green screen that when Jason Momoa dives into the water in Justice League as Aquaman, it's when you see the CGI green screen there, it was as obvious like that. Like I said, but also like I said before, I enjoyed this movie much because of Nick Fury's and Cameron Danvers. Back and forth, because they Brie Larson and Samuel L. Jackson clicked very well together, and as a cat person, I have to say that I loved Goose, but it was, it might be because I'm a cat person, I don't know, but anyway, what did you think, Landon?
So those are both good thoughts from both of you, and I'm kind of in the middle of you both. So I think it's a good movie. It reminded me more of the first Thor movie than anything, where in the first Thor film, it's just straight down the line origin story with the hero, you know, powers up at the end and saves the day. It's kind of, it's basically that film in a redo version. The only difference is that Captain Marvel doesn't have the core relationship between Thor and Loki that really drives that movie. What Captain Marvel's got is it's got these smaller, less important relationships. So the character of Maria Rambo is really, really great, but there's also not a lot of her because most of her story is told in flashbacks. I really liked Ben Mendelsohn's character of Talos, which we'll get into in the spoiler section about why. Beyond that, like obviously Nick Fury is great in this movie. The cat Goose is great in this movie for, again, spoiler reasons. It's hard to talk about this movie without delving into too many spoilers. The 90s aesthetic is really nice. It works. It's great. And overall, like, it feels like a good setup for what Avengers Endgame is fixing to bring. In more respects, it's kind of like one of those movies that's sort of like, oh yeah, here's some little plot details you might want to know before you see this next Avengers movie. Like, that's kind of what this movie is. It's not going to be the most impactful film of the MCU, but it's also an important one. In many respects. So I liked it.
Yeah, it's similar. It's similar to what The Magician's Nephew is to the Narnia series. It's like an off the beat prologue to what The Big Chronicle is.
That is barely accurate.
Yeah.
Like even down to, and again, we, you know, at, we'll have to talk spoilers here a little bit later, but even stuff with Star Force and the way that's set up is very, very reminiscent of a time before the MCU as we know it.
Right.
And so it'll be nice, you know, it's kind of nice to have a little bit of context for certain things.
Yeah, it's this movie, and that's why when people ask me how do I like it, I say that I loved it, and that's a very personal, especially because the connection with my wife and what I loved about it. But if you ask me if it's my favorite Marvel movie, it's not. It's not amazing. It's not overstellar. I think for its role, for its position within the MCU, it was exactly what it needed to be. Like, this movie did not need to be the next Black Panther. This movie didn't need to be the next Iron Man. This movie needed to introduce a character that has a a very important role in the universe from here on out. And in my opinion, it did that, especially with what we saw towards the end and where we're going to start probably seeing this character in the future. So for me, it was perfect. I think my cousin Mario Francisco Robles' comment was perfect. The movie was perfectly adequate.
And speaking of your connection with the wife, and even though I probably is the hardest on the movie, I agree with you. It's great to hear, because just like Alita and all the females I know that have seen it, they love it, and right. That they have my support and all that. I right. just feel that. And yeah. However, I think I do the movie a disservice if I would just call it perfect, even and so forth. I'm rather being honest than just lie about my feelings, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, some movies, is nothing wrong that this movie didn't click with you, as probably other Marvel movies know. But you, like a true fan, you'll still support the movie, because that's yeah. what fans do. So,
and I especially support it because of the same reason as you pointed out, what I pointed out in our episode on Amateur Otaku about Alita. But,
I had the distinct honor of seeing it with my girlfriend, and she really liked it. Obviously, her thing, I think, in the movie was Goose. She really liked the character of Goose, which
mm-hmm.
I'm saying character, but Goose really is a character.
It
not
is
just not just a cat. It's not accurate to just say, oh, it's a cat. It's its own character, and so Goose was cool. And then I think she also enjoyed character of Carol Danvers, because she just kept, like, she kept striving, trying to figure out these pieces of her past, and you know, it makes for a good solid couple hours into the movies.
I think more than anything, I personally was surprised of Brie Larson's the demeanor that she gave to Carol Danvers, that little Kerr attitude, that spunkiness. I was pleasantly surprised by that. The way it was very 90s quippy, but I was actually pleasantly surprised. I actually enjoyed that. And I have to piggyback on what you all guys also said. Her banter with Nick Fury is amazing. It's like they're at their best when they're in the same room together, and how they change. It's how they always have a joke in the inside, no matter how many people they're with. That was awesome.
Yeah, I really like that dynamic between those two characters. That's probably the best pairing that they've had with Nick Fury so far, because before yeah. it was always like he would have this quippy banter with either Natasha or Tony or Maria Hill, but he never really just like had a character that he could let loose with. And it turns out that Carol Danvers is that character, and it was a lot of fun.
I would even say that he's always been this quippy, especially the way he kind of always low down jokes with Maria Hill whenever she asks him a serious question, like you see, like from The Avengers. It's just that here with Brie Larson, he's so young, he's not covering anything. He's just pulling out everything, pulling out all the stops.
Yeah, I would agree. It's not that he doesn't with other characters. It's just that he really does it a whole lot more here.
Yeah.
He's got a specific type of confidence about him that you don't quite see in later versions of Nick Fury. And I think that's partly because later on in the series, he's seen some things. And after you've seen a few things, you start to get more serious.
Right. So I was gonna
spoilers?
Well, before we go spoilers, how about I have two things I think you might want to discuss, and then maybe we want to give a grade to the movie before we move to spoilers, just in case people want to hear, stop, and then go to the spoiler area.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Let's do it.
Now, I wanted to ask a question to you guys. With all this, this is not with the means of going controversial, but I think it's one of those questions that in a podcast like this one, where we talk about all the things geek fandom, I got to ask, with all the controversy with Brie Larson and Twitter, blah, 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 and all the crap that's been going on, I'm going to ask a very simple question. Because I love the movie, you guys probably already know my answer, but I want to ask you guys, do you believe that Brie Larson was miscast, or was she great as Miss Captain Marvel?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
It is. I think she was perfect for me.
The same exact thing as Chris Hemsworth being cast as Thor. Like, in the first Thor movie, he was great, but he wasn't great. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't great as Thor till, I'd say Age of Ultron at least. Like, that's really when he became great as Thor. And I think it's kind of the same thing with Carol Danvers. Like, you know, they gave Brie Larson this one movie to open up a little bit, and then later on is when they'll get to get into the meat of that character a lot more. And really, like, she'll really get to start doing some stuff that I think fans will be proud of. Like, no, this movie, I think some people wanted this movie to be Wonder Woman, and it's not. And it doesn't have to be. See, that's
right.
Like that's one thing that I think some people get hung up on is like, oh, it's the first female led Marvel movie. Well, yeah, it is, but it doesn't have to be Wonder Woman. It's trying to be something entirely different. It doesn't have to conform to some specific expectations just because of that.
And they're two very different movies too. Very different characters as well.
Wildly different characters. Like, the character of Diana in Wonder Woman, like that, Wonder Woman is very much set up as an old style epic. Mm-hmm. And Captain Marvel is very much set up as a cheesy 90s movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Agreed. What say you, Isaac?
I agree with Landon. She wasn't, to go back to Alita Battle Angels, she wasn't a Rosa Salazar that clicked right away. I think she has potential. And I want to judge her before on if she was a great, perfect cast or not 3-4 movies in, if you know what I mean.
Right. So it's potential, but it's too early to tell.
Pretty much.
Cool. That's a fair answer. Because, you know, someone, it's better than writing her off from her first going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's great. And I think so, too. I think that there's a lot of room for her to grow. And now when we talk spoilers, we'll probably discuss a little bit why there's a lot more room for her to grow. But at least this first, I hope that she keeps that demeanor of her, of that spunkiness that I that I really enjoyed that we haven't really seen from a female lead in a superhero movie as of late, which is something different, fresh, in my opinion. Now, Landon, one of these days I'm going to have to fight you about your thoughts about Hemsworth in the first Thor movie, but that's a different story.
Well, because okay, I'm going to say this
in this recorded format, and I'm going to fight everybody. but after Avengers 1, Thor is my favorite Phase 1 movie. But that kind of has to do with the fact that Thor is my favorite superhero from Marvel. So that's a different story. But
okay, so to be crystal clear, I think Hemsworth is the best cast character in all of these movies. Like, I fully agree with that. But I think in the first film that he did, Kenneth Branagh was doing this very Shakespearean, big operatic kind of character, and Thor is way better when he's kind of let loose. And so I think that even though that film is great, I think it's structurally probably in terms of structure the best Marvel film. But like Hemsworth's performance is not as good as it is in the other movies he's in, and so that's kind of what I meant when I was referring to like the comparison to Brie Larson. Like, I think that in future appearances, people are going to gravitate to her performance more than they did in this movie, just for the same reasons that people gravitate to Hemsworth more in Thor Ragnarok than they ever will in the first Thor film.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So what do you think? Should we talk some spoilers, guys?
Well, if I were to give the movie a brief rating real quick, I would give it... tough. I probably 4 out of 5. With if we were to do letter ratings, I'd say a B. It's got a lot to offer. It's really solid. There's areas that like could have made the movie stronger, but the movie succeeds in what it needed to do, and it's a good film. So, yeah.
And I can personally say that I would give it a C, or if we're going with the number rating, it would be a 3 out of 5. Okay. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. So middle off the road, so to speak.
I would give it a 4 out of 5. I'm in the B plus, A minus category. I have to see it again to see where it sits. But for me, it's between the B plus, A minus, and mostly because I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, and because of how well it functions within the greater MCU. I'm a little bit biased, but yeah, I'm gonna say probably a B plus. That's probably where it's at for me.
Good deal. So, spoilers. Where do we even start on those? Wow.
Let's talk the twist, so to speak.
Okay, so yeah, I was about to mention this earlier when I was talking about it, but Talos, the character Talos, played by Ben Mendelsohn. I really, really like this character. And it's funny because when they first released the first look at the Skrulls, like, face it, the promotional shot of the Skrulls is really bad. It looks really bad and cheesy and lame. But in the movie, the character design for the Skrulls is really, really good. And, like, whatever that still frame was that they released in public, that it kind of like it looks like an off-green Nickelodeon slime color. They actually look like they could be real aliens in this, and they looked very much like they came straight out of the comics. But Talos in particular, I really like the character because we're led to believe early he's a villain, and it turns out that he's not. He's just trying to save his people. And the movie does that reversal really well, and it kind of pulls out from under the rug all the secret invasion theories that people had for the MCU. Like, there's probably almost no way we're getting secret invasion now. Almost no way.
And I'm okay with it. I've never been a fan of the secret invasion storyline, so A-okay with that.
Yeah, it's just, like, at this point, if they did Secret Invasion, it would be so random and not make a lot of sense, because instead we were given a really poignant arc with the characters of the Skrulls. And honestly, like, the Kree continue to be solidified as just frankly bad people. Like, they are a series of big bads in the MCU, and I realize come time of the Guardians of the Galaxy, there's like peace of the Kree Empire, but like the fact that they are okay with doing the types of things that Yon-Rogg and his crew do, then, well, and even Ronan the Accuser, like, you know.
Let's talk a little bit about Ronan also. Wasn't it interesting to see him like without the suffering and weird black scars in his face? That we see him in Guardians?
It very much was.
And the fact that he was part of a unit. Like in Guardians, he's only the only one. Like there's Ronan the Accuser. There's no longer the Accusers as plural. That's a very particular distinction as well.
Yeah, I mean, I dug it. I liked it. But I also felt like he was the most underutilized character in the movie.
I have to disagree on that, actually. For me, it's actually called Agent Coulson.
Agreed. Agent Coulson is the most underutilized character in this movie.
Because compared to Ronan, they actually made a big deal about Clark Gregg's... Is his name's Clark Gregg?
Yes.
Yeah, Clark Gregg.
Yeah. That his character was going to be in the Captain Marvel movie, and he has extremely low screen time, and pretty much he's like, how should I put it? He has an extended cameo, so to speak, and I mean, you make a big deal after that?
Yep. I completely agree. I want to see... I kind of feel that there's a lot of footage that was probably cut of him. I hope that's the case. Because if that was the intention all along, just to give us what we got, it is a little bit depressing. It is a little bit depressing. I actually thought that Ronan was used quite the fair amount. Because at the end of the day, he was not the main villain of the story. He was just another leader of a Kree faction. I kind of enjoyed him, for him to be there as a member of the history of the MCU.
Can we all talk about how perfect the opening credits was?
Okay. Yes, Stan Lee taking the place on the Marvel Studios role.
Yeah.
That is the best opening they've ever done.
Perfection.
I never thought that they would do something that amazing to do in tribute to him, but that was fantastic. That's everything I wanted in a Stan Lee tribute.
Yep, agreed.
I can admit, me and my friends, we got a bit teary-eyed when we saw that one, actually.
I got a little teary-eyed when I saw "Thank You, Stan." Like,
yeah.
Dang it.
I was overly whelmed and excited when his actual cameo happened in the train. For two reasons, because number one is the first of the last three cameos that we're gonna get of Stan Lee. because he already filmed his cameo for Endgame, and he already filmed his cameo for Far From Home. So we're going to still see more Stan Lee in the next two movies. It's the fact that he was reading the script from Mallrats. That yeah. was so amazing, because I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan, and I listen to his podcast regularly. And seeing him reading the script, checking the lines for a movie where he actually acted in, and how it kind of tries to sync, make Kevin Smith part of the MCU, and how it tries to fit all the Marvel Universe stuff into reality. I really enjoyed that that choice. It was just perfect.
I don't know if you saw that, but he basically thanked Marvel for that shout out. He was very teary eyed when he took that yep. photo.
Yep, I saw that. I saw it. I actually tweeted it out. I actually retweeted it because it was just magical. It was awesome.
And I can't blame him.
Yep. I would say, guys, what was your favorite scene overall? If you were to pick a scene that you would say, wow, this is awesome, what would be that scene?
Oh, man, this is hard. Well, it's probably got to be either the scene where Fury is petting Goose for the first time, or the scene where Fury realizes that Goose is actually a real alien.
A Flarkin.
Yeah. Because nice. I knew the whole Flarkin thing from the comics, but I didn't actually realize that Goose was a legit Flarkin. I thought it was just a joke. Kind of like, because in Star Trek they make jokes about the Klingons and Tribbles. So I just thought it was sort of like that. I didn't realize that they were legit being like, oh yeah, he's a Flarkin.
Nice.
It was so much better for it.
Yeah. What say you, Isaac?
And I have to agree. I mean, outside of how should I put it? The scene where the Flurkin claws Fury's eye out, and that's the way he got his eye patch and all the thing. I thought it was rather anticlimactic, but
I agree. But at the same time, like, I would almost expect it to be anticlimactic because, Nick Fury has this persona of, like, oh, I'm just a big hardened soldier. And I've always felt like some of it is a little bit of him putting on a show because he has a, not really a cult of personality about him, but he has a personality that causes people to pay attention. And so if he can maintain that, even when he's injecting humor, like imagine if somebody asked him about his eye, and he said, yeah, cat, scratch it out. Like, that's not anywhere near as cool as him.
But he could technically say an alien scratch it out.
True, but, you know, then it doesn't jive with the whole jovial aspect of Captain Marvel.
Now that's true, but you have to also keep in mind that, like the great Tony Stark has always said, Nick Fury is the greatest spy. He is the spy. His secrets have secrets. So, what I enjoy about Nick Fury is that he is not the one to give you a straight answer ever. He's like the MCU's rational version of the Joker. He always gives you a different story for the same thing. And I think that's going to be kind of the thing with the eye, because now the audience knows. But keep in mind, the audience knows this 21 movies in, and we met him 21 movies ago. So that's pretty amazing. And interestingly enough, the first time he actually tells a story about how he loses his eye is in Captain America Winter Soldier. And he kind of puts it in the vein like it was a battle where someone betrayed him and stuff like that. Yeah. Like he comes out and says, like he tells Cap, the last time I trusted someone with my life, I lost an eye. But now it's so funny how we see this that happened with Goose. And interestingly enough, some people might feel that that kind of, it's like a course correction from MCU history, but it kind of doesn't reduce the fact that it was that someone he trust betrayed him. It's kind of the same thing.
No, it's just exaggerated war stories.
Exactly. Which Nick Fury, with the essence and cool factor that he always will have, he can tell as many stories as he can. I'm even waiting for the moment in Endgame where they meet Fury again, and then whatever, and then Captain Marvel spills the beans of how he lost his eye, and everybody's like, what? I can see it happening.
Yeah, I can see that happening too.
Yeah, I can completely see it happening. Now, provided, of course, that Fury comes back and, like, the whole dusting is undone.
I mean, they say that in this, they say that Spider-Man Homecoming is a sequel to Endgame, and he's in that movie. So,
yep,
that
yep.
is true. How did this happen that Nick Fury basically just came back all of a sudden? Like, he was gone for a while, and now he's in three movies this year.
Well, probably because it's the end of an era, so he has to be everywhere. He started an era, he's ending the era.
Good point.
So, my favorite scene, I'm going to say I loved all the... I have to agree, I was talking to Aaron, and when he reminded me about this moment in the movie, it kind of... I can picture this as my favorite scene, is when Captain Marvel finally defeats Von Rogg, and after him trying to get her to fight mano a mano, so to speak, she just photon blasts him into his on his ass, and then he comes out and says this simple line: "I have nothing to prove to you." That was like, drop the mic right there, done. For me, that was epic, and how she just, and then after that, she just drags him, throws him in the ship. And yeah, Joe starts the ship. That was awesome.
You know why I loved it more than anything? Because it's Jude freaking Law.
Yep.
Honestly, like, I would love to see his character come back at some point, because it's Jude Law. Like, I feel like he was not underutilized, but, like, he was very subdued and, like, kept on the down low because he was trying to hide these facts from her.
Mm-hmm.
He was a little bit like Ares was in Wonder Woman, not to just keep drawing distinctions between these two films, but in terms of how they both manipulated both characters, very similar. And I'd say the only major difference is that, of course, Yon Rogg was more of a mentor character. But aside from that, like, he was still the mentor who he manipulated and abused facts. And that's not a good thing. That's the way that, you know, you get his fate in this movie.
Yeah.
Over under 20% that he is going to be in another movie.
I think under... I think he's done. Especially with everything that happened at the end with him, and how strict the Kree are. I think he's dead already. I wouldn't be surprised if he is.
Oh, over under 20%? Over 20%? Like, they cast Jude freaking Law. I'd say 95% chance he comes back.
Oh,
yeah,
so much.
Even if it's something.
Landon, all I'm going to say is this. Mads Mikkelsen, gone. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah,
Michael B. Jordan, gone.
How is it? We specifically saw them die. We did not see this character die, and
that's true.
Usually, when you don't see a death, they are still alive.
But I don't think he was that big of a deal in terms of his character, though. He was pretty much just foil for the story. But hey, you look very comfortable in 95% land. I'm good in under 20% land. I'll build a wall in a couple of minutes, but we'll be fine. We can trade postcards, and I got owls that send messages and emojis.
Let's talk that both of the credit scene.
Oh, Isaac, you didn't tell us what you think. Over 20 or under?
I say over, but I say like 25, 30, so to speak.
Such reservations. Look at you. You're like you see the line and you're just going right over it by you're a daredevil, you.
I've always been a daredevil. I mean, I went to the gym with only 2 hours of sleep, and that's not the smartest thing to do all the time. But I digress. But yeah, I think they could like one other mistake, and you are as good as dead, so to speak. But I wouldn't be surprised if they kill him off too, if you know what I mean. But post-credit scene, yeah, one of them is one of the most funnier ones, and in some cases, adorable at the same time. And the other one is arguably one of the most important and best executed of the credit scene that I ever seen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Agreed.
I also agree. I feel like that scene with her meeting the Avengers is maybe the best post-credits scene. Like, I really liked the one from Through the Dark World with the Collector. Like, I feel like that's probably the best part of that entire film.
I don't blame you. Even me as a fan of Thor, I don't blame you.
That movie is so disappointing.
Yeah.
But I digress.
But yeah, that... and for those that are listening, to recap the scene, we have the Avengers in present day looking at the dust toll. I'm not going to say death toll. I'm going to say dust toll of all the people that have been incinerated by the snap, or like pop culture is calling it, the snapture.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. It's okay.
So
yeah, right?
Yeah,
you know I'm hip. So I'm hip. So the snapture, ladies and gentlemen. So we see the total of people that have been affected by Thanos' death glove, and we suddenly find out that they actually found the pager that Captain Marvel had given Nick Fury to contact during moments of emergency. And for some reason, it's encased in this cubicle that looks like a miniature of Sordon's lair in Power Rangers. And it's being powered up to keep sending a signal until it suddenly stops. It dies. And like, there's questioning on why is it dying? Why is it not giving out a signal? And Cap gives the order to boot it back up. And then Black Widow comes out and say, boot it back up, and as soon as you get an answer, I want to know who's on the other side. And then Black Widow turns around, and boom, it is Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel in the flesh, in present day, not having aged a bit in front of Black Widow. And she only has one thing to say. And what did she say, Landon?
Where's Fury?
Dun, dun, dun. That was just a perfect post-credit scene. And isn't it amazing how they're making it very important for us to see two things? She hasn't aged a thing. And it's been what? It's been almost what? 25 years? 20 years? Since she left Earth? Yeah, 20 years.
More than... we're going on 30 years, actually.
25 years. And I think for me, in my opinion, is the most important fact, is that she is with the Avengers already. So that means that when Endgame kicks off, she's going to be there. She's not going to be she's not going to be like Thor in Infinity War, that he arrives in the heat of battle in the last 45 minutes. She's going to be there from the very beginning. So she's going to be a key player on the Avengers being on Earth. What kind of makes me think, what if she has a big role to play in saving Tony? There's a lot of things here that I love, that I'm really happy that was what we got to get ready for Endgame.
There is a scene in the recent Endgame trailer where you see Captain America, Black Widow, and I think it was a War Machine, and you can see them look at something, and so suddenly have a pretty big space between the two of the characters, sort of like how they have cut someone out just for the no spoilers, if you know what I mean. And I wonder if that could be Carol.
Could be.
Oh yeah, I agree, like 100%. It's Carol, and it's Professor Hulk.
I want to see how that. I'm really excited to see how that happens. How we get to Professor Hulk. I'm really excited to see what happens there. But yeah, there's a. What is the relationship, or what is the interaction that you guys are most excited about right now for Endgame?
The interaction I'm most excited for?
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one. Will? Will? I don't know that I've thought about this. Honestly, probably Gamora. Like, I want to see Gamora come back in some capacity, but... aside from that interaction, dang, this is hard. Now I'm having to think. I'm having to stay here and think. Tony and Nebula.
You know what? That's exactly what I was thinking. Especially after the last trailer, where you see them back to back working on armor. That was like, I can't wait to see them interact and how they help each other to survive. I just, if we get to that point, I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, I agree. Tony and Nebula.
What do you say, Isaac?
That's a very good point. Maybe it's Rocket Raccoon and how he is handling the loss of the entire Guardians, and he's helping out with Avengers, and he is pretty much alone again.
Mm-hmm.
To some degree.
And how he fits with the Avengers, like his role there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually going to be interesting. You're right. It's going to be a very nice one to see. I can't wait for Endgame. That movie's going to be something else. I'm really excited to see that movie.
Well, I think that Captain Marvel is a great intro to it, because it's not trying to be some great big grand something. Like Age of Ultron tried that with Captain America Civil War, and Captain America Civil War was the superior film by leaps and bounds. Black Panther tried a different approach, which was coming off of Civil War. How do you make a movie that's just as epic, but also smaller scale?
Right.
And Captain Marvel is kind of like, how do we enter a movie of massive scale by dialing it back? And so that's sort of what it is trying to do. And I think it does it effectively.
Did you guys ever have a chance to read back last year when Infinity War came out? I had the privilege of write a theory piece about Infinity War. And I talked about and I theorized about Captain Marvel's role in the MCU and how it's going to play with Krees and Skrulls and stuff like that. And one of the theories that I had, and I want to know what you guys think of this. One of the theories that I had was that this conflict between the Krees and the Skrull, which even though we didn't see them fight anymore, I think it's far from over. I think that there has to be someone within the Skrulls that has enough hatred to bring the fight to the Kree. And after them regrouping in their new planet, it could be probably a point of drama for Captain Marvel, the fact that she failed to keep the Skrull pacified. And the Skrulls probably revolt against that. And I still have a feeling that there's hope that the conflict between the Kree and the Skrulls will spill down to Endgame. I don't think the villain in Endgame is going to be limited to Thanos. I think there's going to be a cosmic level war in terms of probably bringing this Kree and the Skrull and the Supreme Intelligence and all that into this. That will have Captain Marvel unite with the Avengers to save the universe, not just from Thanos, but from that.
Didn't they say that there were another villain in? Yes, I'm misremembering something, because I swear that I read something like that. That there would be a second villain, just not to Thanos.
That's the thing. I have not. I would be surprised if there isn't. I'll be pretty confident that there is. And it would be awesome that it takes the form of the Kree and Skrull war overshadowing everything in a way. Because even though, here's the thing, even in this movie, even though we have seen and heard of the Kree Skrull war, even in this movie, we really haven't seen it. We haven't really seen that war. You know what I mean? We've seen the effects of it, but we haven't seen them go head to head like this cosmic and like this cosmic debacle that is shown in the comic books. That would be awesome.
I kind of agree, but at the same time, like, I think when they have, or with the benefit of them having kind of recalibrated exactly the nature of that war, it feels like a very tiny war in comparison to everything else. Like it's basically the Kree-Skrull war in the MCU is the U.S. government versus the Native Americans. In the comics, it is more of an equal, you know, the United States versus the Soviet Union. And that's a much better type of analogy when you want to do something like Secret Invasion versus now, like, I don't know that they could do Secret Invasion.
I doubt
that. If they did, it would be massively different. Like, I really like this direction they took, the Skrulls. It makes sense to me. The war that I think would be way more interesting is the war between the Kree and Xandar. Like, that's a big giant war, we are told. Sounds like it's way bigger in scale than whatever the Kree were fighting with the Skrulls. And so I think if they were to delve into that, it'd be really cool. Another one that'd be really cool is I can't remember the name of the Empire, but there's a character in the comics who is actually Star-Lord's dad named Jason.
Is that that's the one that's Thanos' brother?
No, that one's Star Fox.
Okay.
Yeah, Jason is a completely different character, and he's like a benevolent dictator character. He played a really prominent role in Planet Hulk in the comics, but they cut him out in the movies. They cut him out as the Star-Lord's dad. So Jason is kind of like a character that they've really completely ignored in the MCU, but he has had spats with the Kree as well, and I think if they were to like delve into some of these little wars that the Krees have had. It'd be interesting to delve into something with his empire.
So, guys, anything else you guys want to share on this goodness?
That's about all I've got, honestly. Like, I feel like we've covered the majority of what was going on in Captain Marvel, and we've kind of started delving into other stuff, which is good for speculation, but...
At the end Endgame is only a month away, can you believe it?
It's absurd. This should not be, but it is, and so I'm pretty hyped.
Yeah, I reflect. I mirrored the Satan of Landon.
It's Can't wait.
7 weeks. 7 weeks.
Can't wait.
Get hyped.
Yeah.
And then avoid Twitter like the plague.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's why I'm watching it on opening night. Yeah.
I probably won't get to see it on opening night. I think I'll probably won't get to see it till Friday. So, guess I better gear up for just completely avoiding Twitter for a whole day.
You could mute the word Thanos or Endgame. I mean, but anyway, should we wrap this up?
Yeah. Where can we find everybody on Twitter and social media?
You can find me at Emblemaniac on Twitter, and you can find the podcast that me and Brandon Alvarado is doing together, which is the Amateur Otaku, which we are going to talk about animes and manga that we are following and we think everyone should give a chance. The next episode, I don't know, is the Pokemon episode or is the Marvel episode going up first? I don't remember.
The Pokemon episode is going to be a bonus episode that will launch early the week. And then the Marvel episode will be up at the regular schedule this week.
Okay.
This
week. Yeah, we have a bonus episode considering the new Pokemon news, but... and Pokemon is a rather big thing in anime, but I digress. Where can we find you, Brandon?
You can find me at Lexan Alvarado. That's LEXAN. Lexan at Lexan Alvarado on Twitter. You can find me at the Amateur Otaku Podcast and Amateur Otaku on Twitter at Amateur Otaku RTF. And you can find all my Flash writings. I am not called a Scarlet fan for nothing. You can find all my Flash writings at TheRevengeOfTheFans.com. I have a column called The Final Lap where I speak all my Flash theories and thoughts. And I recently started a Flash solo podcast called The Scarlet Fan Unplugged. An episode has been out for a couple of days now. And a new episode will be coming out this week as well. I'm really excited about it. And I'll see you guys on Twitter.
Wow, I can't believe Brandon has a podcast called The Flash Unplugged.
The Scarlet Fan.
Excuse me. The Scarlet Fan Unplugged. Let me get that correct. Wow. That's awesome. You can find me on social media. I'm on Twitter at The Bell Man. That's spelled B-E-A-L-L because my ancestors couldn't spell. I'm also on Instagram at StoryBake, YouTube at the same, and my website is storybake.net. We'll see you guys next time. And you can find more from Wabam Entertainment at wabamentertainment.com. And we'll catch you guys around. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
Hey, though.
You've been listening to the Wabam Entertainment Podcast. For more from Wabam Entertainment, visit us on the web at wabamentertainment.com. You can let us know what you thought of this episode on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at WabamENT. Thanks for listening. We'll see y'all next time.